Why Cynthia Dill believes that she should be the next senator from the state of Maine. Cynthia Dill is a Maine state senator, lawyer, and Democratic candidate for Senate. She's one of six candidates vying to win the seat held by retiring Olympia Snowe. Dill bills herself as a strong progressive voice in the race and says her two main opponents are running campaigns fueled on fear. Despite some polls placing her a distant third behind independent Angus King and Republican Charlie Summers, Dill insists she's not afraid and is urging fellow Democrats to, quote, man up. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we continue our series of Your Vote 2012 candidate interviews with Cynthia Dill. Join the conversation, email talk@mpbn.net, post to our Facebook page, tweet at Maine Calling, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. A conversation with Cynthia Dill, Democrat for U.S. Senate. This is Maine Calling.
Your Vote 2012 election coverage is made possible by MPBN Radio listener contributions and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me. By Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine with offices in Portland and Blue Hill. And by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com.
Cynthia Dill, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome back, I should say, since we spoke to you back during the primary. I just said in the open that you believe your two opponents, main opponents, there are six in the race, but there are two what are being billed as major opponents, Charlie Summers, the Republican, and Angus King, independent, are basing their campaigns on fear, playing on fear. Fear of what?
Well, in the case of Charlie Summers, his fear-mongering relates to the nation's debt and deficit that he regularly refers to as a crisis. And I believe his national security concerns are also a little blown out of proportion. There's a lot of fear associated with the Republican agenda in general that he ascribes to. When it comes to Angus King, I think he's exploiting fears that people have of the 2010 re-election of Paula Page repeating itself. And he's also kind of harping in on this notion that the Congress is broke and that the two-party system is the cause of all the problems that we face here in Maine.
Mightn't, though, the Democratic Party itself be fearful that Angus King is going to win this and they want to curry favor with him or at least not do something to distance themselves from him in case he does win and chooses to caucus with Democrats?
Well, that to me is politics. That's not fear. That's just running the numbers and hedging your bets. That's, I think, different than suggesting that somehow America's in a crisis that can't be solved or that the system that's perpetuated the strongest economy, the largest free, economy in the world, is somehow on the verge of collapse. Those are very different things.
Are you disappointed in the way that the Democratic Party nationally has treated you so far?
Disappointment is not the right word. I'm not at all disappointed. I'm not surprised. I'm not bitter. I'm in this race because I believe that there's a place for a strong progressive woman to articulate values and concerns that the others are not raising. And my interests are not necessarily aligned with the national party's interests at this time. Do I suspect that if and when my poll numbers change, that there will be plenty of support? I certainly do, and I welcome it. But right now, I'm a big girl. I get it. Politics is a tough business, and that's the game we're in.
You are you point out that there are major differences from your set of values, the issues that positions that you take, and the other two candidates. What are three issues on which you are very different?
The issue I think that's incredibly important for Maine people is my views on taxes and tax fairness compared with the views of Charlie Summers and Angus King. Both Charlie Summers and Angus King support extending the Bush tax cuts, and I support President Obama's proposal to extend Bush tax cuts for everyone up to $250,000, but thereafter to repeal them. I believe that the Bush tax cuts are in large part the cause of a significant portion of our nation's debt, and they need to be addressed in a responsible and fair way. So when it comes to tax fairness, I'm the only person who's suggesting that not only we eliminate Bush tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, but I also support the equalization of the capital gains rate with ordinary income and support repealing tax subsidies for instance, large oil and gas companies. And finally, one significant difference when it comes to taxes, this is just the tax issue, is I support the financial transaction tax, which is something that's used in other countries. It would be a very, very small tax on stock trades to have the people who are responsible in large part for the collapse of our economy to contribute in a way to the rebuilding of our economy. So there's the tax issue. When it comes to the Keystone Pipeline, I'm the only candidate in the race who opposes us as a country building this infrastructure. I think it's dangerous environmentally, it won't bring jobs, and it's going to perpetuate our reliance on fossil fuel. And there are other differences as well. I don't support a balanced budget amendment. I'm the only candidate in the race who supports the feasibility study of the Maine-Woods National Park. When it comes to social issues, I'm the only candidate who's stated explicitly that I will vote to repeal DOMA. I'm the only candidate in the race.
It's a defense of marriage act.
Yes. And then I think most importantly, when it comes to health care, I'm the only candidate in the race who supports a single-payer universal health care system. I believe there should be Medicare for all. I think that's the only responsible solution and path forward.
This has not been a major issue in this particular campaign, but you point out a difference also on the issue of gun control, in particular assault weapons.
That's right. Thank you for reminding me. That's true. I believe that we as a country can responsibly regulate the purchase and sale of large ammunition clips and killing type machines. I know in Maine we have a strong gun culture and a hunting culture that I fully respect and support. And I believe and support the Second Amendment. But I also think that it's not unreasonable to put some controls around the buying and selling of assault type weapons, and in particular, these large high capacity ammunition clips that are used in some of the shooting sprees that we see around the country that are just so disheartening.
Arguably issue number one on the minds of many voters, the economy and job creation, which have been slow to improve, and voters are becoming impatient this time around. What can you as a U.S. senator do to have an effect on either of those?
Well, I think this circles back to your question about fear. I do not believe that because we face a debt and deficit that we can't make responsible investments in infrastructure projects and put people to work. We have simultaneously vast numbers of people who need a job, and we have a lot of work that needs to be done on our roads, on our bridges, and our public infrastructure. So I would, as Maine's next United States Senator, support a budget that includes investments in infrastructure. There's the American Jobs Act that the president has proposed that I would support immediately that will create over 1 million jobs. I also fully agree that the key to job growth really is an investment in education, early education, job training. We need to put veterans to work. There's a Veterans Jobs Act that I would also support. So we really just need to do things. There are proposals in Washington that are waiting for the requisite number of votes to pass that'll lead to job creation. And we need people with the political courage who will state openly and honestly that they'll vote for them.
And are those the things you just mentioned, or are there other?
Well, certainly the President's Jobs Act is important. The proposal to reform the tax code is incredibly important because it'll bring necessary revenues to address the debt and deficit, hopefully ease up concerns on the economy. But I think clearly what the government can do is invest in infrastructure projects, and education would be the two key things.
You've been mentioning the national debt. What is it that we should do? First of all, how serious is the problem and what do we do about it?
The problem is very serious, but in my view, it's not a crisis that can't be solved. It was caused in large part by the Bush tax cuts and unfunded wars, as well as the collapse of Wall Street. And we just need to thoughtfully and carefully address each and every element. When it comes to the Bush tax cuts, we obviously need to repeal them to the extent that people should pay their fair share. When it comes to the unfunded wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, we need to bring our troops home. We need to make responsible and careful adjustments in the military budget. I believe we can responsibly reduce the military budget without threatening our national defense and, importantly, without risking jobs at Bath Iron Works or Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. There is military spending that's identified as unnecessary by military generals themselves. So we have a bloated military budget. We can make other responsible cuts in addition to addressing taxes. We can call upon those responsible on Wall Street who led to the collapse of our economy to chip in a responsible way by enacting the financial transaction tax and keeping a careful eye on the mass sums of money that are moved around in our economy.
We're entering the winter months. Gasoline prices seem to be hovering at high levels still. What can the U.S. Senate do, if anything, to affect or lower the cost of energy?
I think the price of gas generally is a global market, and that a United States senator alone won't have a significant impact on the price of gas. When gas goes up in the United States, it typically goes up in Germany and other places around the world. However, I think what a senator can do is support fuel efficiency standards, because if we have cars that use less gas, then Americans will pay ultimately in the long run less amounts of money for the same transportation needs. And so we can make cars and trucks more efficient. We can certainly increase and improve on sustainable, renewable forms of energy as alternatives to gas. And we can clearly do what the president has done, which is increase to the extent we can responsibly our domestic production of gas and oil. Under President Obama, we've had the highest domestic production of gas and oil in decades. And I think that's helped shore up some of our needs.
Would you support increasing expansion of domestic drilling and offshore drilling?
I don't support offshore drilling, certainly around Maine or in Alaska. There are offshore drilling areas in the South, for instance, the Gulf Coast area, that I support the continuation of. I don't believe we should stop all offshore drilling if it's being done in compliance with environmental laws and is contributing positively to the economy. In terms of drilling, again, I mean, there are drilling and refineries in parts of our country that are successful and should continue. I do not support, however, expanded drilling, certainly in Maine. I don't support hydrofracking. You'd asked earlier where I differ from other candidates in the race, and this is an important difference, is that Angus King claims that natural gas through hydrofracking is America's second chance, and that's in very stark contrast to my belief that hydrofracking is somehow an elixir or is promising for the future. To me, that's incredibly dangerous and not really the way I want to go.
Would you support tax incentives or other incentives for development of alternative energy, wind, tidal, solar?
I do support incentives that are going to lead to entrepreneurship and innovative solutions to our problems. I don't support tax incentives on a continuing basis for an industry that's developed and should no longer need tax incentives to turn a profit. I think tax incentives should be used as seeds for companies that are innovating and exploring alternatives and need government assistance to get things going. I think we have a good example, the internet. Other technologies were started with government incentives, and I support the continuation of those kinds of incentives. That's going to lead to research, development, problem solving.
Do you support expansion of nuclear power?
You know, I don't. If the science ever finds a responsible way of disposing nuclear waste, then it's something I might consider. But right now, I mean, in Wiscasset, we're still sitting on nuclear waste that potentially threatens communities and health and safety of our people. So there is no responsible way to decompose or deal with the waste. And so nuclear power is not, in my view, something that's really realistic right now.
And in terms of weatherization, do you support government, supplementing or subsidizing weatherization efforts?
Well, conservation efficiency is clearly the best way we can reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, especially in Maine. And we have the Regional Gas House Greenhouse Gas Initiative, REGI, which has been a wonderful example of how you can create a marketplace for carbon and use proceeds from that to fund these kinds of grants for efficiency, conservation, and efficiency. So I definitely think that the government can help people by providing the tools needed to make their homes and buildings and businesses more energy efficient. That's good for everybody.
We're talking with Cynthia Dill, Democrat for U.S. Senate. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
On the campaign trail, Joe Biden and Paul Ryan each have played the role of attack dog.
Governor Romney believes it's okay to raise taxes on middle class by $2,000.
The president is just throwing away money.
Now the vice presidential nominees will debate the issues face to face. I'm Audie Cornish. Join us this evening for special coverage of the vice presidential debate from NPR News.
Join us for Your Vote 2012 election coverage tonight, live at 9 on both MPBN radio and television. Radio will rebroadcast the debate tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Television will repeat the debate Sunday afternoon at 3.
On the next Fresh Air, the patent wars in the smartphone industry and what they say about the new digital economy. We talk with New York Times reporter Charles Duhigg. Last year, the amount of money the smartphone industry spent on patent litigation was equal to the cost of 8 Mars rover missions. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Your Vote 2012 election coverage is made possible by MPBN listeners and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me. By Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill. And by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today, a Your Vote 2012 interview with Cynthia Dill. She's the Democratic candidate for the Senate seat being vacated by the retiring Olympia Snow. We'd like you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And we'll take some calls in a moment. First to Facebook, Sarah writes, what are you doing to assure that we don't have a repeat of Libby Mitchell's campaign against Paul LePage and Elliot Cutler? And how do you feel about Maine Freedom's ad for you? I think the Sarah's referring to the sort of the spoiler effect that happened in that race. Are you concerned that you may be perceived or actually play the role of spoiler?
Well, I certainly am aware that a number of people are concerned about it. It's brought up on a regular basis. And what I tell people is that, you know, I got in this race when Olympia Snow was still running. And I got in the race because I felt that there was a need for the debate to include issues that people care about, poverty, women's rights, public education, the environment. And I'm still in the race and I still play a role because neither of the other candidates are talking about these things. So there was a three-way race in 2010. And yes, people are disappointed with Paul LePage, but that's all the more reason why Charlie Summers is not going to win.
Jim writes from Hollis via email, do you support updating our plurality voting system to make it truly more democratic, such as the ranked voting or instant runoff system that's used in Portland that would, he says, would help protect against the spoiler effect?
I do support that. And I just want people to realize that we've had three-way races in Maine for as long as I can remember. I mean, John Baldacci was in a three-way race. Angus King himself was in a three-way race. So there are always going to be three-way races. And the fact that there was this one anonymously in 2010 with Governor LePage shouldn't prevent people from voting for the candidate who they want to see in the office. And I would suggest that if anyone's a spoiler, it's really Angus King. I mean, we can't just have independents coming onto the scene who are super wealthy suggesting that they are going to solve all our problems without telling people which party they're going to caucus with in Washington, where they stand on the significant issues of the day, like poverty, Social Security, Medicare. So I'm not the spoiler. I'm the only person in this race who's talking about 1 in 5 Maine children without food security, 15% of Maine families living in poverty, protecting Social Security and Medicare, expanding health care for everybody. So when people in this race, when somebody else stands up for these things and states clearly that they are going to go down to Washington, support President Obama, join with the Democrats in fighting against the extremist Republican agenda, maybe I'll stand down. But until then, I'm in this race for the 99% of Maine people who are totally disenfranchised right now.
Let's look a little more closely at health care. You said you support the Affordable Care Act, but would go even further to a universal single-payer system?
Absolutely. I think that, without a doubt, that's the only responsible way to take the profit motive out of the system to ensure that everybody has access to health care when they need it, which is early. Preventative health care is what's going to reduce the cost of, you know, health care over time. And the fee-for-service model that we currently have in existence is completely inefficient. It doesn't treat the patient. It just pays for duplicative and unnecessary treatments and tests. And it's a system that's broken. And what we need to fix it is a whole new model. The insurance companies shouldn't have a role. Businesses shouldn't be responsible for administering health care. We need a single-payer system. We need universal health care. And we need to work our way towards it. But in the meantime, I do support the Affordable Care Act. I think it's incredibly important.
Medicare and Social Security, what's our strategy?
Well,
your strategy?
Yeah. So again, those are probably the most important programs in Maine. We have the oldest population. I'm the only candidate in the race who says unequivocally, I will not balance the budget on the backs of our seniors or on the backs of people who need these vital social insurance programs. When it comes to Social Security, the simple and pretty much uncontroversial solution to shoring up financially Social Security for the long run is to raise the income cap from $110,000, where it currently is, to $250,000 or beyond. All the studies show that if we made that minor tweak, that we would have financial stability for decades. And Social Security, as you know, is an insurance program that people pay into. It's incredibly important for women, especially because women live longer and they're contributions to the program are less. They take years out to tend to children. They get paid less. So it's an especially important program to protect for women. When it comes to Medicare, it was ridiculous that Part D was enacted, not allowing Medicare to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies for decreased prices of drugs. So I would work very hard to reform that part so that we could spend significantly less on prescription drugs and, again, shore up the program for people who need it. It's a good program and people like it.
Should we change eligibility in Medicare, say, increasing the age requirement?
I don't believe, because changing the eligibility really is cutting programs. And right now, I mean, 60, again, for women especially, they have more complicated diseases at the end of their life. And 65 is. I think, a suitable age. Now, someone may suggest, oh, we're living longer. But if you really get granular on those studies, the people who are living longer are very affluent. And it's the people who don't have access to wealth and financial means. They're not living longer. And in Maine, we have high levels of poverty. And so Maine people aren't necessarily living longer.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's go to Kate. Hi, Kate. Yes, go ahead, please.
I just wanted to thank Cynthia so much. You know, she's just talking about political courage, and I think that, in highlighting the differences between her fellow candidates, I think Cynthia's just the only choice. And, as a young woman, in college now, but thinking about going back to Maine and thinking about entering politics, she's just been such a role model in advocating for, poverty and women's rights and things that I really care about. So I just wanted to thank Cynthia so much.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks, Kate.
Kate, you're out of state in school?
I am. Yes, I'm down in D.C. Doing my political science and social studies, social sciences. But I want to return to Maine because it's where I grew up and it's where I love. But and I just filled out my absentee ballot, and Cynthia was my only choice. She's my girl.
I'm just curious, since you're down in Washington, how is this race getting talked about down there?
It's not, frankly. There's so much speculation about Elizabeth Warren's race, and I'm disappointed that the media and the Democrats haven't stepped up to, really highlight the issues that Cynthia's facing in this world that's kind of revolving around Angus at this point.
All right. Well, Kate, good luck in your studies, and we'll see you back here
at some point.
Right. All right.
And thank you both so much.
Thank you very much.
1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Henry on Peaks Island. Hi, Henry.
Hi. I have a question about Iran, and that is, What do you think to be the likelihood that within the next year we will be engaged in a war with Iran? And what would be achieved in such a war, and at what price?
Well, thank you for that question, Henry. I certainly don't wish at all that we're at war with Iran. I'm not a believer that some sort of preemptive action on our part is going to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon, and I don't subscribe to the position that's currently being proposed by Benjamin Netanyahu, that there should be some sort of red line. I believe that our economic sanctions should be increased, and we should do everything we can diplomatically with our friends around the world to deter Iran from developing nuclear capability. But for me, the idea that we would begin a war to prevent the creation of a nuclear bomb, I just don't see the risks associated with war being necessarily less than the risks associated with the development of a weapon. So it's obviously a difficult hypothetical to answer with any degree of certainty, but as Maine's next United States senator, I will need a high degree of hard evidence that our national security is at risk before voting to support a war.
All right. Henry, any follow-up? Okay. Thanks for calling. 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. I think voters are concerned about what they perceive as gridlock in Washington, the failure to get business done because of the high intensity of the politics that are happening there. You are sort of unapologetically progressive. Does that mean that you're how would you get at this issue of gridlock?
Well, a lot's been accomplished in the last 4 years. I think people forget that we did pass the Affordable Care Act. We appointed two great justices to the Supreme Court. We repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We brought the economy back from the brink. We passed the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. I mean, there's been significant gains in the last 4 years. But that being said, I recognize that there is gridlock. There is the Congress has been the least effective, has done the least in whatever decades. And I get that. And I believe that it's in large part due to a small group of very obstructionist Republicans. And that may sound overly partisan, and it probably does. But I think it's the truth. It's been studied. It's been reported on by the Brookings Institute. And my being a progressive, unabashed progressive Democrat doesn't mean that I'm stuck in my ideals. What it means is I'm passionate, I have values, and I use those values in trying to advance goals. And I recognize that the only way you are going to advance your goals is to compromise and get things done. And in my work as a legislator, I have a track record of reaching across the aisle and working with anybody who gravitates around an idea that's putting the interests of Maine people forward using facts and science and a moral compass. So I think you need idealists to get things done who are willing, you know, to compromise because they really believe in their goals and want to see some movement.
We have an email from Chalmers who writes, would you support the no budget, no pay proposal as a way to get to spark some action in Congress?
Well, I certainly would support that, and Angus King uses that as a way to get people to laugh and to, you know, engage with the audience when we're together. But I mean, the bottom line is a majority of the United States Senate are not there for the paycheck. They're all, for the most part, millionaires, and to withhold their $175,000 paycheck sounds like it might, in fact, be a motivation to get the work done. I just don't buy it. I think you need people who are not motivated by money, who are down there because they want to put the public interest first. So if we truly want change in the United States Senate, we need to send more women. We need to send younger people. We need racial diversity. We need to not have a majority of the people making decisions about an economy made up of families who are struggling, have them all be millionaires. So, I mean, yes, I support no pay, you know, no budget, no pay, but I don't think that really gets at the problem. The problem is we have a Congress that's completely out of touch with the day-to-day lives of ordinary working families and small businesses. And they're not there for the paycheck. They're there for the power. They're there for a lot of reasons, but they're not relying on their weekly paycheck. And I think it's naive to think that that's going to actually move the needle.
Okay. Our guest is Cynthia Dill, a Democrat for U.S. Senate. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, More of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
I'm Jennifer Rooks. This week on Maine Watch, question one on the November ballot. If it passes, Maine will make history as the first state to approve same-sex marriage by voter initiative. We'll discuss what question one means for Maine and Maine people with Matt McTighe of Mainers United for Marriage and Carol Connolly of the Christian Civic League. We hope you'll join us.
And you can join us for Maine Watch tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 9 on MPBN television, or tune in tomorrow afternoon at 12:30 here on MPBN Radio. As part of our Your Vote 2012 election coverage, at 8 p.m. this evening, MPBN Radio will broadcast a special one-hour pre-debate program originating from our public radio colleagues at WNYC in New York City. Hosted by Brian Lehrer with PBS NewsHour host Judy Woodruff, this live program will also bring in comments from listeners around the country. Tonight's vice presidential debate from Danville, Kentucky, will be broadcast on MPBN Radio and MPBN Television starting at 9. Radio will repeat the debate tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Television will repeat the debate Sunday afternoon at 3 as part of our Your Vote 2012 election coverage. Join us at 1 o'clock this afternoon for It's Your World. Blaine Harden, former East Asia Bureau Chief for The Washington Post, discusses prison camps in North Korea. That's this afternoon at 1 o'clock, immediately following Maine Calling, here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2012 conversation with Cynthia Dill, Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Let's go to the phones to South Portland and Scott. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me. My question has to do with something that was touched on a little bit earlier. I'm on the issues. I'm very much in line with what Cynthia Dill stands for, and on the show she comes across as, you know, a reasonable sort of let's all get along person. But when I receive campaign materials from her, they're pretty fiercely partisan in ways that would seem to be counterproductive to working together with 99 other people in the U.S. Senate to achieve the laudable goals that she has. I'm wondering if she could address sort of this discrepancy between the presentation of her stand on the issues on the show versus sort of what I get in my mail and what I see in other media outlets about how you can get things done with people when you sort of immediately alienate half the people.
Well, Scott, I suggest you put your reading glasses on and read the very small print on the things you're getting in the mail, because you'll find that they are actually being sent to you by the Republican Party.
Well, and I can think of things where I've heard you speak and just quotes from you in news reports, sort of speaking in, you know, partisan code.
Well, I don't exactly know what you're referring to. What I do know is that I have a record of accomplishment that is bipartisan, and anyone who works with me in the legislature could attest to the fact that on the Judiciary Committee, I work with my colleagues in the Republican and Democratic Party. I've supported every judicial nominee that's been appointed by Governor LePage. I sponsored legislation that led to the Three-Ring Binder Project, which is 1,100 miles of fiber optic cable in Maine connecting rural communities to the global economy. That was done on a bipartisan basis. I've worked to amend the budget to improve the educational system. I've worked with my colleagues, the Republicans, in every facet of my legislative life. Does that mean I don't have values and speak strongly for the things that I care about? Absolutely not. I don't think that's being partisan. I think that's actually speaking truth to power, speaking clearly about where I stand and letting people know what my values are. After all, when you're voting for someone, you're sending them to bring voice to what you care about. Right now, we have Angus King in the race who's telling you, I'm going to do what's in the best interest of Maine people, but I'm not going to tell you who I'm going to caucus with. That's incredibly disturbing to me, because if he decides, take him at his word, and there's a chance he's going to caucus with Republicans, that's an agenda that's completely contrary to everything I believe in. So maybe it's partisan to say that I'm a Democrat, but Democrats have a platform that they voted on that support women's rights, support public education, support protecting the environment, support the things that I care about. I think it's perfectly appropriate to have an organization, to join a team who wants to move this country in the right direction. After all, we are a democracy. You need a majority of votes to get things done. And the fact that I'm passionate about things that I care about, I'm connected to the ordinary challenges of Maine people, I speak out honestly about what's really at you know, the core of our problems is my view, healthy and what we need. And to suggest that I'm partisan or unwilling to get along or shrill or bitter is just simply not at all the truth. It's a brush that's been used by the Republican Party to paint me as some hysterical liberal woman, but that's not who I am. And
Scott, Scott, quick response.
I guess I would just say that the impression I got of, is from my own sort of absorption of campaign coverage, not from reading, you know, Republican media or mailings. So it's just something I hope that if Cynthia Deal gets elected, that she can, you know, keep in mind, I guess.
All right, Scott.
I would like to just to say that my opinion of the reporting of this campaign is really that it's been poor. I mean, I think that it's true that unfortunately what is taken from a 3-hour debate or a really meaningful conversation about issues often is reduced to some soundbite that is supposed to get the most bang for its buck. And I encourage everyone to really try to participate at forums, hear people speak at length on issues, meet them face to face, because the reporting on the campaign is not really a reflection of the campaign itself.
Let's go to Carabasset Valley and Bruce. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yes, in light of the fact that our roads and bridges are crumbling across the country, and especially here in Maine, my wife and I drive 40,000 miles a year, so we notice it in Maine. Would you be in favor of supporting a federal gasoline tax, and do you think states should also be raising their gasoline tax this time to build infrastructure, provide jobs, and pay for this?
I certainly would consider a federal gasoline tax if the proceeds were directed to the improvement of our infrastructure. It's definitely one. I'm as far as I'm concerned, everything's on the table when it comes to improving our infrastructure, and a gasoline tax is something that I would consider. I'd have to hear more about how much the gasoline tax would impact families in Maine, because if what we're going to do is disincent people who need to get to work from driving, then that's going to be a problem. So there's certainly other things I'd have to consider, but in my view, it's something on the table worthy of consideration.
Let's go to Stockton Springs and Mary Kay. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hi, Mary Kelly.
Sorry.
Thank you so much, Cynthia, for your courageous and progressive candidacy. I have reference to Ocean's Resource in Cobbs Cook Bay, where after, is it 80 years, we are doing tidal energy. And this is largely run under the radar for whatever reason. It began under FDR and is continuing now with public monies as stimulus, private capital investment. How can we support this?
Well, you really bring to light a good news story in Maine. Clearly, the tidal energy business that is started in Eastport is something to celebrate. It's the first time we're putting electricity on the grid from tidal power, and it's being done in Maine. And like you said, it's in large part the result of the stimulus bill, which the president proposed and thankfully was supported by our Republican senators and members of Congress. And it's a good example, like you said, of a public-private partnership forging a path to the future that is one of renewable energy, putting people to work. It's just a win-win situation, and I think you can support it by supporting candidates who clearly and unequivocally support the president in providing stimulus money to companies like this one. It's a perfect example of what we can do collectively and in conjunction with responsible government.
We're moving around a little bit here, but we have a message from Deb on Facebook. It says, what about Aroostook County? I haven't seen much evidence of your interest in people in this area.
Oh, that's not really fair. We love Aroostook County. I've been to Aroostook County a number of times in the campaign and have friends in St. Agathe and Madawaska, and we're heading to Aroostook County next week to interview with a high school student there and to have a forum. As I mentioned earlier, I am the proponent of the Three Ring Binder Project, which has brought high-speed internet to Aroostook County, which is going to help farmers and fishermen in that area. I was in Aroostook County this summer and was hearing from an organic beef cattle farmer who needs a processing plant, talked to him about some of the solutions to getting farmers the access they need to processing locally so that they can maximize their profits and you know, further their farming interests. I think there's great potential in Aroostook County. I love the fact that there's so many families who pass along businesses, and I intend to consider Aroostook County as important as Cumberland County when I get to Washington.
Let's go to the county now, and Shane. Hi, Shane.
Hey, hello. I just wanted to comment on a couple callers ago about the fact that, you know, you're overpartisan. I think it's really impressive, and I wanted to, you know, show you some support as far as, you know, stepping forward with your ideas. And I think what people forget at times is, in a lot of ways, Democrats are always accused of that when they've tried more than a lot of Republicans as far as reaching across the aisle, especially over the last couple years. But I really support you, and I hope you do well and continue your fight.
Thank you, Shane.
All right, let's go to a few minutes left here to Cape Elizabeth and Brian. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I have a question. First, I'd like to compliment Cynthia on addressing a couple of buzz phrases, and that is reaching across the aisle and...
Go ahead.
Making agreements across the aisle, compromise. Yeah. But my question revolves around taxes. I believe the taxes is either called a Social Security tax or FICA tax. What I don't understand is why its collection is limited to a certain income and doesn't continue all the way up the income scale.
All right. You know what? Unfortunately, Brian, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're actually out of time. I was hoping we were going to move a little more quickly on that question. You want to go really quickly, Cynthia?
Well, I support increasing the cap from $110,000 to $250,000 or beyond.
Okay. And with that, we are out of time. Cynthia Dill, thanks.
Oh, sure.
Thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Cynthia Dill, a Democrat candidate for U.S. Senate. In the coming days, we will speak with all the candidates on the ballot for U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives. Our Your Vote 2012 interviews will be archived at the MPBN website. Go to mpbn.net and click on the Your Vote 2012 banner. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Volunteer Lucas Randall Owens answered your calls. Matthew Schreiber ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team and John Keimel. Monday on the program, a Your Vote 2012 interview with Shelley Pingree, Democratic candidate for Maine's 1st Congressional District. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.